I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. The live show is available every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. Simply search for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. And now, on with the show.
It's Deuxième Partie, right? In my best Picard accent. Deuxième Partie.
This will be our...
I think my accent was better than Picard's. What do you think, Dave?
No, it was pretty good. Pretty good. I got the gist of it. So we're going to segue. I know, Eric, that you wanted to get into a lot of the animated voice actors, but since we're at 2:37 already, maybe we could save that for another time and just kind of focus on the high points. Is that okay with you?
As long as we're going to focus on the animated actor, yeah.
Oh yes, yes. We're not gonna skip over that. I'm just saying
the next Joker chronologically, and very, very important.
Yeah, I agree. So we are now going to start our Joker actors retrospective, and if you'll kindly share my screen, I'll show you where we're starting off. I want to thank again Dr. Hugo Strange for being here to lend us his expertise, advice, and insights into the real Joker versus these various fictional incarnations of the Joker. So we're going to start off. Oh, thank you, Doctor. We're going to start off with Batman, Mask of the Phantasm. This was released by Warner Brothers in 1993. Some interesting notes I put together here for this particular installment. Due to standards and practices, the Joker in Batman the Animated Series could not kill, but with the feature film, The Mask of the Phantasm, that could possibly change. Mark Hamill had asked about, that's the interesting thing about Mask of the Phantasm, and I want to talk a little bit about how Mark Hamill came to be involved. Mark Hamill is the actor in question that we were discussing here at the beginning. Mark Hamill had asked about other characters the producers had planned to actually introduce into Batman the Animated Series during his recording of a supporting part in the Mr. Freeze episode Heart of Ice. Another actor had already been cast and had actually recorded an episode. The producers were not convinced that the first choice was going to work. They don't talk about it, but I've heard lots of rumors over the years that that actor was, in fact, Tim Curry. Tim Curry had previously made quite an impression playing a murderous clown as Pennywise in the TV adaptation of Stephen King's It. Mark Hamill was informed that they were holding auditions for the Joker. At first, he was apprehensive about the Joker and thought perhaps another role was maybe something that might be better suited for him. At the audition, after seeing the model sheet for the character, it reminded him of the Blue Meanies, actually from the Beatles' animated film, The Yellow Submarine. The producers knew that Mark Hamill would be perfect for the Joker when they heard his now famous, or is that infamous, laugh. Mark knew and understood the importance of the Joker's laugh. He is a comic book fan and understood that he could bring something truly unique to his portrayal of the clown Prince of Crime by using the laugh in a new way, such as to reflect the Joker's mood. He had been on the road in the cast of Amadeus. As Mozart, he was required to have an abrasive laugh as part of that part. Over the course of 6 months, to avoid his performances from becoming stale, he had started to change up his Mozart laugh, and this turned into perfect prep for his role as the Joker. Initially, after being told that he had landed the part, his insecurities again came to the surface after realizing he would be following Jack Nicholson's Joker from the classic, in my mind anyway, 1989 Batman movie. While the other actors would often sit while they recorded their dialogue, he would often stand and use his body language and motions to help bring every possible nuance of his Joker portrayal to life. Besides using body motion to help emphasize his performance, Mark also imagined and treated the recording sessions as if he was doing a 1930s radio drama. The producers wanted the Joker to be a balance between both killer and a clown, and to not portray the character as one note, either silly or just a raving maniac. Mark Hamill considers the Joker to be the Batman's archenemy and often compares him to Professor Moriarty of, obviously, Sherlock Holmes. Many consider Mark Hamill's Joker still to this day and his performance to be the gold standard for the Joker. So tell me, Dr. Hugo Strange, how do you feel about Mark Hamill's portrayal of the Joker?
To me, it is probably one of the most accurate performances you can get to the Joker. I mean, he has the ferocity, he's vicious, but yet super theatrical. And oftentimes he gets a bit funny as well.
Never forgetting the punchline.
If you can, no, there is no punchline. It's like, if you can laugh at murder, I mean, yeah, Joker's funny.
Interesting perspective. So tell us, Eric, how do you feel about Mark Hamill's portrayal of the Joker?
Well, this is my definitive Joker. That's just right off the bat. This is the Joker to me. I've said before that I didn't really grow up reading superhero comics. The comics that I grew up reading the most were G.I. Joe, Transformers. They were adaptations, licensed products, essentially. I always thought the G.I. Joe comic book was better than the series, incidentally. But that's the kind of comic books I grew up on. So most of my superhero knowledge came from the cartoons. And when the Batman animated series came on, I remember one of my friends telling me about it because I hadn't watched it. And I remember just being completely mesmerized the first time I saw an episode of the Batman animated series and how amazing I thought it was and how I thought that was the definitive Batman for me. And it still is, even with all the new versions of Batman that have come out and even with all the new versions of the Joker that have come out, even with the reason for this show, which is Joaquin Phoenix's amazing performance as the Joker. This is my definitive Joker. Mark Hamill's version. Just look, you know, it's funny because you and I didn't coordinate about the images we were going to use. And this image is perfect. This is the Joker right there. That those eyes, the nose, the smile, the yellow teeth. I mean, everything. That's the Joker right there. He's sinister and cruel, yet he's whimsical. Yet he's imaginative, he's intelligent, he's dangerous, but he's silly, he's crazy. You know what I mean? He's all those things. And Mark Hamill's performance as the Joker, in my opinion, has no comparison. It is the ultimate definitive version of the Joker. And it's funny, you know, I did some research and we talk about Tim Curry as sort of And I guess a footnote, because I think he was only in one episode and that episode isn't readily available unless you have the full collection of all the Batman animated episodes. And apparently the reason that Tim Curry was cast aside was because he had bronchitis. You heard that? Apparently he had bronchitis and he was fired. And that's the only reason we have this amazing version of the Joker, is because Tim Curry got sick and they had a deadline.
I will say this, Tim Curry, I'm sorry, but I'm glad you got sick so we can get Mark Hamill.
And Tim Curry is amazing in his own regard.
He's right. Absolutely amazing. But this, like what Eric said, I highly agree with him that this is the definitive Joker as far as media is concerned.
I am a huge fan of Mark Hamill's portrayal of the Joker. This is one of the high points. This episode is full of the high points for the character. I think if you're looking for a comic book accurate read on the character, you don't get any better than Mark Hamill's take on this character, because it very much is the comic book Joker brought to life, as well as Batman the Animated Series is the comic book version of Batman brought to life. All the various elements are there. And they all work. They did such an amazing job with Batman, the animated series. I mean, it is a classic top to bottom. the way that they approached all of the characters was amazing. Maybe at some point we'll get a chance to actually delve into Batman the Animated Series and actually maybe work our way through the various episodes and kind of just dissect them one by one because there's so much there. But I agree with everything everyone here has said. My personal favorite, I think, is going to be Nicholson in the 89 movie, even though it is a departure. But Mark Hamill's Joker in Batman the Animated Series is very much the comic book Joker brought to life. His turn in Mask of the Phantasm is particularly amazing and so well done. The way that they use the character, the role that he plays in that story. Batman Mask of the Phantasm is probably the best Batman movie they've ever made. I love Dark Knight. I love Begins. I mean, there's just, you know, obviously I love the 89 movie. There's a lot of Batman movies I love, but I think Batman Mask of the Phantasm is probably still to this day the best Batman film they've ever made, they've released in theaters, in my humble opinion. I've said that before on this show, and I'm saying it again right now.
I think it's the most underrated Batman film. I mean, I think that's almost undeniable. Unfortunately, Mask of the Phantasm didn't do very well at the box office and is considered a sort of a box office bomb. Which is a real shame because it is an amazing movie. I own it, which is high praise for me because, to be honest, my DVD Blu-ray collection isn't that big. And this is an amazing film. And I wish I had been able to see it in the theater, but it wasn't out in the theater very long, unfortunately. It's an amazing film. It's a great, great film with great imagery, great characters, everything. I'm not sure if I agree it's the best Batman film. They're one of our Jokers coming up, I think, might have that title for me. But again, this is my definitive Joker, Mark Hamill. Mark Hamill's animated version of the Joker for me is the definitive Joker.
We have an interesting comment actually there from Bobby Chambers. If you put that comment up on the screen, I have a response to that. Bobby comments that he wishes we could see Mark in a live action performance, I'm assuming as the Joker. I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that.
Yes, let's do it. Let's have it happen.
Now, I am also going to call out, though, there is several episodes of the 1990s Flash television series, which starred John Wesley Shipp. Mark Hamill actually played the Trickster in several of those episodes. And while it's not quite the same thing as the Joker, it's close enough at times that you can kind of see a little bit of what he might have done. So while it's not the same thing, in a sense, we do get to get a little bit of a glimpse of what it might have been like. So I would definitely highlight checking out the Flash, 1990s Flash television series and focusing in on those particular episodes where Mark Hamill actually played the Trickster.
Bobby, I couldn't agree with you more about this. And I think, unfortunately, the Trickster is probably the closest we're going to get. But I think it would be fascinating, especially because Mark Hamill, with his age, he would be an older Joker. And that could be really, really good, you know, with so many bad spins, including, I would say, Luke as an older character. It'd be kind of nice to see him almost kind of redeem himself and come back as a live action older Joker and really pull it off. You know, I think that'd be fascinating. I don't think it's ever going to happen.
I think that's what we all wanted with the CW Crisis crossover.
That would have been awesome if they had something like that.
Yeah, that would have been amazing.
And it looks like Bobby's never seen the 90s Flash, which I highly recommend that. I grew up on that as well. Bobby, that's a great series, I think, in general. That's one of the neat moments of it because I think it's one of the few times we see kind of like a real sort of comic book villain looking like a comic book villain on that series, if I remember correctly. So it's been a while since I've seen it. It's an underrated series. The Flash live action series, definitely one to look out for, and probably the closest we're going to get to the live action Mark Hamill Joker.
Yeah, I'd have to say definitely, if you haven't seen it, Bobby, I definitely recommend checking out the 1990s Flash television series as a whole. But I would definitely say look out for certain particular episodes. There's I think it was called The Ghost, is really good. It introduces a character called Nightshade, very sort of a pulpy era kind of hero. That episode's really good. We also have Deadly Nightshade, where that character has a modern counterpart that's kind of a Punisher type of character. We see the differences between the two. Those are both really great episodes. There's a character that introduces a doppelganger for the Flash. They essentially clone the Flash, and he has a rival called Pollux, and that's actually a great episode. But the standout has always been, while there's fun episodes for, you know, Captain Cold and Mirror Master, and those are all a lot of fun, they don't really look much like their comic book counterparts, except for Mark Hamill as the Trickster. It's very much the comic book Trickster in a live-action television series. And Mark's performance is very reminiscent, and you'll hear echoes of the Joker and what he's doing in terms of his voice. And you can also match it with his mannerisms and his performance. And again, we get a sense of what he might have been like as a live action Joker.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, Bobby does say, I've seen a couple, but now I'm going to binge the whole thing. I guess he just missed that episode, Bobby. Yeah. So he is familiar with the series. I don't think he's seen the Trickster.
It's definitely worth checking out. So if we're good here with Mark Hamill, are we okay to move on?
Yes, I think I just want to say once again, I can't say enough good things about this version again. He is my definitive Joker.
Okay, I'm going to throw out another couple animated Jokers of note here just real quick. I don't want to dwell on them too much because we're running a little long, but I don't want to just gloss over them. Maybe at some point we'll be able to do like a deep dive and look more at the Joker in animation. That would be an interesting thing to discuss on the show. From The Batman from 2004, I want to mention Kevin Michael Richardson. While his Joker is a radical departure at times from what people are used to, it was an interesting portrayal, and that's actually a decent Batman series worth checking out if you haven't seen it. And, of course, I'm going to mention The Dark Knight Returns, the two-part animated series that actually starred Peter Weller, actually as Batman, the older Batman. It's an adaptation of the Dark Knight Returns series by Frank Miller. And in that, Michael Emerson, he was in Lost, that actually portrays the Joker in that. That came out in 2012. There's a lot of really great actors and voice actors who have portrayed the Joker in various media. I just want to kind of call those out just real quickly before we move on to kind of our next two. We've got three Jokers here we need to cover, but two very important big ones to discuss for sure.
I did want to mention, because we talked about him before, and for listeners, I have a People article up that talks about the various actors that have played the Joker. And we had talked about Batman, the Bold and the Brave, and that's not the one I'm talking about. You talked about Brave and the Bold, which I did put a picture up of him. But the other one that we talked about before, I believe, is Steve Bloom, who actually played I don't think that's right. Where am I losing this here? Keith Michael Richardson played him in The Batman, right?
That's yes, Kevin Michael Richardson.
Jeff Bennett played Batman, and he played him in the Brave and the Bold. And then we also have Steve Bloom, who did Lego Batman in the video game. And those are just a couple of the sort of, I guess, honorable mentions. Because there's, like you said, there's so many actors that played the Joker in animated form, video games, that kind of a thing. But I will have a link to this People article when I recut the episode so that people can look at that.
And, you know, Zach Galifianakis played him, of course, in the Batman Lego movie. And I would love to do a discussion about the Batman Lego movie kind of as its own separate episode, because it has so many weird, quirky, canonical callbacks when you talk about the comics and the movies and everything. And it would be really fun to discuss. I just didn't want to, you know, I feel like that some of these actors and their portrayal of the Joker deserve a discussion But I feel like that we should just kind of set them aside and then maybe revisit this at a later date, just because we have two very important performances for the Joker to discuss tonight. And that's why I kind of suggested that we move beyond. So if any fans want to take any issue with that, I do want to circle back and revisit this topic and get much further into it. But primarily the focus of the show is to focus on the live action versions and call out some of the more interesting highlights on the animated side. But Mark Hamill's Joker is so classic and so definitive, you know, he definitely deserves to be talked about in the same conversation as, you know, Jack Nicholson, Heath Ledger, and Joaquin Phoenix. At least in my opinion.
I couldn't agree more. In fact, in doing the research for this episode, we realized that the amount of actors that have played the Joker as far as voice actors is just immense. It's immense.
Okay, so if we're good there, let's move on. Okay, so this is one of the big ones here, folks. We're talking about The Dark Knight. This was by Warner Brothers. This came out in 2008. I've got some notes here I prepared, and I'm going to read through these kind of quickly, and then we'll get into our discussion here. So the search for an actor to play the Joker for The Dark Knight was extensive, while not only what did I put here? Okay, sorry, I wrote these at 2 a.m. in the morning, so bear with me. While not on anyone's top five list at the time, Heath Ledger's name did come up in conversation because the actor at one time had actually been considered for the role of Bruce Wayne / Batman in Batman Begins. I didn't realize that. I came across that actually researching for the show. I didn't even know that. Ledger's casting initially met with widespread negative reaction, which is very akin to what happened to Michael Keaton when he had been considered unsuitable actually to play Batman in the 1989 film. Heath Ledger was not a fan of the Batman comic books, mostly because it was not part of his childhood. As he mentioned in interviews, he grew up in a household mostly of girls, and the only comics that were actually passed around those houses were actually Archie's. He really liked Batman Begins and felt the role of the Joker was maybe too good to turn down, and he took the role very seriously. While familiar with the 1966 Batman television show, he loved actually the 1989 Batman film. He felt that to attempt to do a portrayal of the Joker in a Tim Burton 1989 world and try to usurp what Jack Nicholson had done with the character would have been a crime. However, he knew that Christopher Nolan's approach created the opportunity for a new perspective, a new approach, in his opinion. In his initial conversations and meetings, both actor and director appeared to be on the same page with the basics of how to portray the Joker in a Nolan-esque world. During the publicity tour, Ledger actually stated that the Joker was the most fun role he had played to date and commented on it being physically difficult from the standpoint of being very physically taxing. So stamina-wise, it was very difficult to portray the Joker. The makeup for Ledger's Joker was at the heart of the inspiration for it actually came from Francis Bacon's paintings. The smeared, distorted look of those paintings was very much something that they were trying to achieve. He would sometimes actually apply the makeup himself and felt that this would help inform his performance. In fact, in certain scenes, the makeup can actually still be seen on Ledger's fingertips from having applied the makeup before doing a scene. During prep, costume fittings, and rehearsals, he kept his approach very mysterious and understated. Only later in the process during filming the actual scenes did he actually reveal his approach, always attempting to maintain an air of mystery and unpredictability about the character. Nolan does mention that Heath intentionally was as concerned with the physicality as well as the internal motivation and calls out silent films as something they were both aware of. Does this harken back to The Man Who Laughs? I am uncertain yet think that there might have been at least a bit of possibility, in my humble opinion. Tragically and unfortunately, as we all know, Heath Ledger did not live to see the total impact his performance would have on the film, its enduring legacy, or get to personally receive his Oscar for Best Supporting Actor in 2009. Heath Ledger's Joker remains to this day, in my opinion, easily one of the best villains of all time, as commanding as Max von Sydow's Ming the Merciless in Flash Gordon, as scene-chewing and electric as Nicholson's Joker, and as calculating and terrifying as Anthony Hopkins' Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs. So tell me, Dr. Strange, how do you feel about Heath Ledger's portrayal of the Joker as we see in the film The Dark Knight?
Well, I believe we get to see a version of the Joker that not many people got to see in the animated series. We got to see one that was more, because, you know, in the animated series, he couldn't, like, really kill, per se. But in this movie, he could kill. And what is one of the first things he does? He shows us a magic trick with a pencil.
Yes.
And people were dropping left and right. And it was, yes, this was a really, really, really good Joker. And personally, one of my favorite portrayals. I mean, he had the insanity. He had the anarchist, you know. And but he was highly, highly intelligent. And he had a plan and he stuck through the plan. And just seeing how smart and intelligent the Joker was, that was really, really nice to see, because he is, I mean, my patient is highly intelligent, just, you know, a maniac. He wants to kill everything and watch the world burn. But he'll do it in a precise way that means more to him, because he doesn't care about anybody else, really. He just, well, except for Batman.
The love for Batman is still there in this movie.
Yes, absolutely.
Interesting. So tell me, Eric, how do you feel about Heath Ledger's portrayal of the Joker from The Dark Knight?
Well, it's funny. You know, you talked about how there were people that were upset when Heath Ledger was cast as the Joker. This person was one of them. I was like, I can't see that. I'm trying to remember what it is that was sort of the definitive Heath Ledger performance up to that point for me. Because I was familiar with Heath Ledger, but I actually hadn't seen a lot of his, I think, bigger movies. I hadn't seen Brokeback Mountain. I hadn't seen The Knight's Tale, I think, the Knight movie that I saw that much later. I hadn't seen that though prior to this performance. And I'm trying to think what was the definitive. I hadn't seen Monster's Ball either before I saw this. I saw those all later. I'm trying to think what it is that I saw that sort of defined Heath Ledger for me. And I can't remember what it was. I think I just thought of him as a pretty boy. I think that's a fair assessment, you know? And so I thought, how the heck is he going to do this? And it didn't seem like it was possible to me. So when I first heard the announcement, I was one of those people. I was one of those fans like, no, this is going to be terrible. Bring Jack Nicholson back, you know, or better yet, let's have Mark Hamill do it. You know, what I was thinking was, why not have Mark Hamill do it? I think that's actually what my mentality was at the time. But I was quickly proven wrong. This version of the Joker is probably, with the exception of Joaquin Phoenix, but you know, it's almost apples and oranges when I compare him to Joaquin Phoenix and his portrayal. I mean, it's almost apples and oranges because they are different portrayals. They're very, very different. And one of the things that Dr. Strange talked about was that what's really neat, or what I really like in terms of the writing, is that this Joker is still a criminal mastermind. This Joker still thinks big. That's in high contrast to the Joker, to Joaquin Phoenix's Joker. But this one is a criminal mastermind, and he has a plan. He has a very devious plan, and he essentially beats Batman. He essentially beats him. Batman kind of has to cheat to win. And so I love that. I love the writing. This is probably my favorite live-action Batman movie, is Dark Knight. I think the way that the Dark Batman is depicted in this is also amazing. The performance of Batman is amazing in this. But all around, Heath Ledger's performance is just so captivating. It's just so raw. It's so It just works on so many levels, and it gives us, to me, what's a very kind of different version of the Joker, but still true to the source material, all the way to the point that we have that disfigurement. When we've talked about The Man Who Laughs, the disfigurement that the Joker has in this version, in Heath Ledger's version, I think is very much reminiscent of The Man Who Laughs. Whether that was intentional or not, I feel like it had to have been intentional. Maybe they took it from Jack Nicholson's Joker, because he was also disfigured, but I'm sure Jack Nicholson's Joker, and with Tim Burton's background, that came from The Man Who Laughed. So it works on a lot of different levels.
Bobby mentioned that he thought maybe I was thinking of Patriot as I think a definitive version of Heath Ledger. I did see Patriot, and I actually liked him in Patriot a lot. I just don't think I saw him, but that, you know, that character's very heroic, right? The character that Heath Ledger portrays in The Patriot is a very heroic character, and I felt really upset when he died, you know? I could kind of see it coming, but but he was a heroic character, that's my point. Heath Ledger's character in The Patriot, which is a very good movie, that's another one I own. I like historical fiction, and there's not a whole lot of movies about the Revolutionary War. Heath Ledger did great in that. So I had immense respect for Heath Ledger as an actor, because I did like that movie quite a bit, and I did like his portrayal, but I just didn't see him being the Joker, and boy, was I wrong. Boy, was I wrong. Bobby also says, Doctor touched on a great note. Most think of the Joker as being crazy. However, this version was always one step ahead. Very intelligent. And yes, Dr. Strange, I think he's correct.
What's interesting too about this particular portrayal of the Joker is because it's a very classical Joker in that we get multiple possible origins. We don't get a definitive origin. He tells us through different scenes, different ways in which he may or may not have got his scar, for example. Something that's also very interesting, too, about this particular portrayal of the Joker is that air of mystery really surrounds this character. I remember reading a lot of people theorizing that because of the Joker has this scene where he talks about, they need you right now, but you'll be dropped at the first sign of trouble. And a lot of people were using some of what the Joker was saying to even potentially theorize that maybe this version of the Joker was like an ex CIA operative of some kind who'd basically been abandoned and found himself in a dire situation, and he came back to basically visit the chaos upon our world that he was put through when he was tortured and such on and so forth. It was kind of some interesting ideas, these different backstories that people began to envision for this character. That's one of the great signs of a great performance and an interesting character, is what people can read into and see interesting things, and it deepens the performance and connects them and interests them in the character in a much deeper way than just a typical surface interpretation.
Well, what I like is your interpretation can be absolutely correct, and I can say I hate that interpretation, and I can come up with my own. And that's what's, I like that. I like the fact that your interpretation with this particular version of the Joker is just as valid as mine. I can come up with my own backstory of the Joker, and mine is just as good as yours in terms of, hey, who knows, right? Because right, there is no definitive origin to this Joker. He lies completely. Are one of the lies true? Are they all lies? Is there truth in the lies? You know, and that is the, you know, the enigma of the Joker, right? He is a mysterious figure, and we don't know exactly right what his backstory is. If we go back to the first appearance of the Joker in the comics, he just starts killing people. We know that he has a relationship with the people he's killing. Like, I think he kills a judge who supposedly convicted him, wronged him. You know, he kills some other people, you know, for reasons superficially that we understand, but we don't know the circumstances. We don't know exactly what happened. We don't know, you know, we just don't know. And so that goes right back to the origins and the first appearance of the Joker in the comics.
Do we think we're good talking about Heath Ledger's Joker?
I want to add one more thing. This Joker portrayal, he was really physically menacing as well. This one can throw a punch.
That's true. And it's
I'd be highly afraid to find this one in a dark alley somewhere. Not as afraid as I'd find the real Joker, but still, this one would be quite terrifying as well.
I want to say this version of the Joker also very much sort of solidifies the sort of crazy relationship that the Joker and Batman have. And you can see it in the animated series as well. But I think they really emphasized the crazy relationship that the Joker has in his mind of Batman. And that basically Batman is like the only person in the world the Joker actually respects. And that's why the Joker would never kill him. He's like the one person that actually amuses the Joker, and he actually feels like some sort of connection to in the entire world.
I was going to say too, I remember the first time I saw the teaser trailer, one of the early teaser trailers for Dark Knight. And I was so excited to see it. And I was very curious to see what Heath Ledger was going to do with the Joker. And it was the first time I ever felt kind of a sense of dread, because I never imagined what the Joker would be like in the real world. And I remember watching that trailer and realizing it's like, wow, this would be pretty terrifying concept. The idea of someone like this actually really existing. And it's the first time I'd ever seen the Joker in the context of that idea of actually being flesh and blood and manifest in the real world. So if we're good there, are we okay to go ahead and move on to our next Joker portrayal?
I wanted to mention sort of an honorable mention, just because we did do a Star Trek review earlier, because I didn't know about this. I only found out about this through my research. I've never seen this version of the Joker. So I just wanted to kind of mention it here. We've got some other Jokers here on screen, but the one that really shocked me, and we talked about it off the air, was Brent Spiner. Brent Spiner actually did play the Joker in the Young Justice series in 2010, and that I had no idea that he ever played the Joker. And I'd be very curious to see what his Joker was like, because I've never seen that show. But since we did lead with Star Trek, I thought that he was definitely worthy of a honorable mention.
Well, I will say that I have seen Young Justice, and it was a great portrayal, and I had no idea that was him.
And isn't that the highest compliment you can give an actor, Doctor Strange, that you didn't know it was him?
Absolutely. I couldn't even pick out his voice. That was, wow. Huh. Intriguing.
Yeah, I definitely want, I want to check this one out, because I've never seen it, and I definitely want to check this one out.
Highly recommend it. Young Justice is a great series.
Very cool. All right, so if that's good, we're going to go ahead and move on to our next Joker portrayal. This version of the Joker is not very highly thought of, and I didn't intend to omit it in the graphics here for the show. Okay.
Oh God.
So yep, we're gonna go there. All right. So.
Oh boy.
All right. So this will just be a brief conversation. I've just got two brief little notes here. So we're talking about Suicide Squad. This, of course, is also a Warner Brothers film from 2016.
Wonderful film.
Yeah. I kind of like the movie. I know a lot of people don't, but to be quite clear, there is not enough of Jared Leto's Joker in the movie to truly compare it to these other portrayals. And while it's quite the thing at times to diss on his performance, I often feel at times it's maybe a bit unfair. His Joker is clearly a standout in the film, in my opinion. And were it not for his and Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn, I think Suicide Squad would be but a minor footnote in the DCEU films. So that's kind of my whole thing here with Jared Leto's Joker. I honestly don't think there's enough of it here to really have much of a conversation. I didn't really hate what he did with the Joker in the film, but I also feel like there's not enough of a sample size here to really get a sense for what his Joker would have been had he actually been able to, you know, be more present in a two-hour film. So that is pretty much my whole take on Jared Leto's Joker. I don't hate it, but I don't think there's enough here to really delve too deeply into it either. Tell me, Dr. Strange, how do you feel about Jared Leto's turn as the Joker in Suicide Squad?
Well, first, I want to say hello to Man of Sam that says hello. Hello back. But as far as Leto's performance, he really didn't have enough screen time, like you said. And really, we didn't know much about the character or why he got the tattoos. I mean, I don't know why he looked like a Hot Topic, you know, version of Joker, but aside from
that was a paid tie-in to Hot Topic, I believe.
Yeah, I can see that, but I mean, it's just like the tattoos, the grill's a bit much. I think they just would have taken the gold or silver teeth or something like that. Like, even if they had been just dentures, like maybe, you know, Batman knocked all of his teeth out and that's why he had those. Like, maybe it was like attack dentures or something. I don't know, but it's it was more like a gangster, like as in terms of like the
like the cartel. He's more like a cartel version of Joker, if that makes any sense.
That makes sense to me. I kind of see it the same way.
I thought that in some ways they were trying to take the concept, because in the original comics, the Joker was, at least some of the early in the comics interpretations, he was very much sort of a gangster kind of a character. And I did feel like they were trying to take that concept and that idea and try to update it to make it a more modern contemporary gangster. And I felt like that at times it succeeded and failed all in the same breath. But like I said, I also feel like that, well, even it's the thing sometimes to diss upon this particular version of the Joker, I honestly don't feel like that there's enough here to really have too much of a conversation about it. It's an interesting footnote, but and an interesting film, I think. But I do think, too, that Jared Leto's performance in this film is one of the standouts. It's one of the things that people were talking about.
Absolutely. And the thing is, personally, I want to see more. I want to see what could have been, like what was he going to bring to the table for the Joker? That's what I personally wanted to see. And the whole selling point of Suicide Squad for me personally was, well, aside from Margot Robbie, was supposedly the Joker was a main character in the film, and yet he's just a kind of afterthought when you watch it. It's just bad. It was bad. Well, that's for a whole another episode if you want to get talking about Suicide Squad and everything that they did wrong. But
yeah, the concept of Suicide Squad is very interesting. I'm very curious to see what James Gunn is going to do with his particular incarnation of it.
Me too.
So I think it might be, I think he's got that kind of quirkier sensibility. And I think that he will better understand the idea, the whole Dirty Dozen idea, beyond just in a general gimmick or a hook. I think he'll better understand how to actually bring all these characters to light and have them, you know, share time on screen and really kind of bring the best out of them, as well as the worst, because, you know, they are villains at the end of the day.
That is true.
Cool. If that's good, I think we'll go ahead and we'll move on to our
Hey, I didn't say anything. So I've been sitting here patiently. No. I've sit here patiently, let you guys have your talk here. Okay. I hate this movie. Okay. I absolutely despise this movie. I've patiently sat here and listened to you guys. I'm getting my two cents in. And Man of Sand, he's in the chat, and we appreciate Man of Sand coming into the chat. He said he came in late. He said, sorry, I was late in coming here. And you know what, Man of Sand, I'm sorry you're coming in at this kind of low point of our retrospective. That's what I'm sorry about, because I hate this this portrayal. I hate this movie. I thought the only good thing about the movie was Harley Quinn, and that is why she got her own movie. That's also a disaster, by the way. I haven't seen it, but it's a box office disaster. But there isn't enough bad things I can say.
It was her own movie.
There are just not enough bad things I can say about this portrayal of the Joker. I hate the look. I hate the way he acts. I hated everything about the Joker in this movie. This is not my Joker. I don't know whose Joker this is. I understand that maybe some people like it and some people wanted to see more. I was very happy that Jared Leto was not even considered to be playing in the Joker. I understand there was a lot of backdoor fighting where Jared Leto was upset because Joaquin Phoenix was cast as the Joker. And I guess he felt betrayed, which could be justified. I think it's possible that he was told that he was going to be in more movies. The only one good thing I will say is that one thing that's interesting about Jared Leto playing the Joker is how many Oscar winners now have played the Joker. Because if you go all the way back to Jack Nicholson, he's won an Oscar. Obviously, Heath Ledger won the first Oscar for playing the Joker. And then we have Jared Leto, who was another Oscar winner, and he played the Joker. And that's probably why he played the Joker, was because of this amazing legacy that the Joker character has now built as far as with actors. So I will say that's the one kind of good thing about Jared Leto that he brings to the table, is that this is another Oscar winning actor who's played the Joker. But that's the only good thing I can say about this particular portrayal. I hated it and I hated the movie.
All right. Well, there you go. A different perspective on this divisive interpretation of the Joker. I was not intending to skip over you, Eric. I'm just sitting here looking at the clock going, Lord, this is a long episode. And I didn't intend
to. It is indeed. But I must have my word.
No, yeah, I get it. I hadn't intended for us to dwell on this version quite as much as we did. So let us go ahead and move on to our last version of the Joker. I've got some notes here I've put together. We'll move through these a little quickly here.
This is the whole reason for this special. The man, the myth, the legend.
So this is the Joker. This is from Warner Brothers. This is for 2019. This film and its success, in my mind, clearly puts all these AT&T selling DC rumors into context. We brought this up earlier, but I do feel like the sheer financial and critical success of this film, I mean, seriously, who would be stupid enough to sell the company full of the potential IP that is DC Comics? And this film shows what is possible. Todd Phillips spent quite some time trying to convince Joaquin Phoenix actually to take on the role of the Joker. While at first blush, that may sound crazy, simply think back on the tremendous performances and critical backlash a misstep with such an important pop culture icon such as the Joker could potentially be. It makes sense that many actors would be at least a little bit hesitant. Phoenix does state that from the first moment he met with the director, he felt that he could trust him. And he felt that Phillips had a unique way into approaching the character and the world in which he inhabits, yet again emphasizing the importance the director's take is in helping to create these landmark performances. Todd Phillips with Joker has elevated himself into, in my mind anyway, an elite group of filmmakers. When you look at the likes of Tim Burton, who did Batman, Christopher Nolan, who did Dark Knight, Stephen Norrington, who did Blade, and Alex Proyas, who did Dark City, I consider all of these masters at creating a dark and mesmerizing world full of compelling characters. His now iconic laugh actually comes from watching videos of people who have similar forms of this laughing condition that is actually portrayed in the film. Joaquin states that he took no inspiration from any of the previous portrayals or comics into consideration to prepare for his particular interpretation. I'm going to agree with him for the simple fact that this is, in my opinion, or that his Joker is much more of a tragic figure, more akin to the man who laughs than actually the criminal mastermind or agent of chaos that is, in particular, Heath Ledger's Joker. He states in interviews that his dance was actually inspired by a video he found on the internet of Ray Bolger. Most people recognize or know Ray Bolger as the actor who actually portrayed the Scarecrow in the MGM classic, The Wizard of Oz. At the end of the day, Joaquin Phoenix's performance as the Joker is truly mesmerizing and an acting tour de force. His 2019 Oscar win for lead actor continues and builds upon Ledger's win, as well as Logan's nomination for Best Adapted Screenplay, and continues to show the incredible potential for the source material that can come from comic books. And I truly believe that. So these are just some of my notes I put together. So why don't we just go ahead and we'll start off with our guests. Please, Dr. Strange, tell me your thoughts on Joaquin Phoenix's portrayal of the Joker.
Well, it was a tragedy indeed, but it's like the movie is like it sunk you in. It made you almost want to feel sorry for him until you saw what he did. Everything that he did, there was no excuse for, no matter what. But again, everything is from his perspective. So you don't know actually everything that's really going on, which I think is kind of great because you kind of sort of get a glimpse of Joker's mindset in this, like everything that he sees. And it's almost like an origin story. Well, it is his origin story. But again, you don't know where he really came from because, I mean, he was adopted and everything. So they kind of redacted that a little bit, backtracked, which I thought was a good move because now we know that the Joker's real name is not Arthur Fleck, which they would have caught a lot of flack for. But, I mean, he was psychotic. He was frail, which I didn't really particularly care for about that because I like the real Joker can throw a punch, a really painful punch. I've had a couple of those myself, but I don't know. It's like he didn't think grand. He was only thinking small. But again, this is like him kind of like flowering into the Joker. Like at the end of the movie, he's sort of becoming the Joker that we know, and maybe like in a sequel he'll be more of a mastermind. But then again, does he have that capability with his mindset? That's what I'm curious to see.
Well, what do you think of what Man of Sand just said? It's like an unreliable narrator. And he goes on to say, it's not clear whether Joker's memory is fully accurate. And I think he hit the nail on the head.
Absolutely. I mean, it was like we were watching The Killing Joke almost. Like, what is his real origin story?
I couldn't agree more. I think that's the interesting aspect of this version of the Joker, because it really delves into the insanity of the Joker. And this is really you, Dr. Strange, being a professional, being in this field. This is, I'm sure, what a lot of your supervillain patients are like, the ones that suffer from schizophrenia. This is classic schizophrenia, I think, right? That's going on with this version of the Joker.
Oh, absolutely. It's poor Jimmy, man. Yeah. But absolutely. I mean, it's schizophrenia. He's seeing things that aren't there. He's believing. I mean, look at his, forgot her name. Sorry, I haven't seen the movie in a minute. The
girlfriend?
Quote
unquote? Quote unquote?
Yeah, quote unquote, for sure. It's like he thought he was seeing her everywhere that he went, but in the end of the movie is revealed she was never there.
Exactly.
So the things that he read, do you even know if that's what he actually read or not? That's the thing. It's like, do you know if he was adopted? Do you know if, you know, that was his mom, or maybe it was his mom? Maybe he's just misreading situations. Like the meeting between Wayne, was that really how it went down?
Right.
You know, it's, I guess, everything that you're seeing is how he perceived it.
So I managed to work out my technical issues. I was just going to say it's an interesting concept, because they've been talked about that they've been having a hard time figuring out a way to do a sequel to this film. And I was listening to the two of you talk, and an interesting way to actually look at this sequel would be if maybe he is an unreliable narrator actually trying to tell his own story. And the sequel is actually a different series of events that still lead to the same place.
Hmm. I love that. You know, it really does give you a lot of different possibilities.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we had a bit of a hang up there, Eric, so I don't know if you want to restate that.
Well, I was just saying that, for just as an example, for instance, if we had a different version of this film and it was from Bruce Wayne's perspective as a child, seeing these events and seeing what ends up happening to his parents and his interpretation of how these events came to be, that would be pretty interesting. That actually be another interesting character study as well, you know, in terms of what this film really is, which is a character study.
We don't get another Gotham, I'm fine with that.
I'm with you there, Dr. Strange. I am definitely with you there as far as I Gotham was something that I watched. I tried to get into it, and I unfortunately saw the last episode, which really upset me because that's not Batman.
All the episodes until the last two, I did not even watch them. I binged it, and I was like, it was like a guilty pleasure. It was like watching a soap opera.
Bobby Chambers says there is a rumor that he isn't the actual Joker. Joker we know will be a sort of copycat villain that will be inspired by him. Would that bother you if it became true? Dave, I think you had this theory, didn't you? Didn't you actually espouse this theory on a previous episode?
Yes, I actually did it during our Joker review. I brought forth the concept of the three Jokers, which I think actually is, it's interesting because with DiDio's exit, I don't know if that project is still moving forward or not. It seems that there's a lot of changes. But there is this concept called the three Jokers. And the idea is that there is this original Joker that inspires the ones who come later. It's why the Joker appears to die and then always comes back from the dead. But that there's an initial first Joker that is sort of like an urban myth or a legend, kind of in the same vein as what they were trying to do with Batman in the original New 52. And this concept of the three Jokers was even heightened actually during the New 52 run of the Batman comics. It would make sense that they would use this concept for the film because it gives them a lot of avenues and different ideas to explore. But I am a big believer in the three Joker theory.
Look at Bobby's own answer to his question. This is pretty cool. So he says, however, when Bruce is older, the Joker would also have to be much older. That would be our avenue to get Hamill. And I'm like, that's brilliant. I mean, I'm like, wow, I got chills. You know what I mean? So if, cause that's one thing, my brother recently saw this film just this last weekend. He went and finally saw it and he came in and he wanted to talk to me about it because it was like, ah, I don't know how I feel, you know, that kind of thing. And one of the things he talked about was the age problem that he was like, the Joker is like way too old compared to the age of Bruce Wayne, because it would be like, what? So he's going to be like, because Joaquin Phoenix is like in his early 50s. So what, when Batman comes around, he's going to be in his 70s, a 70-year-old Joker. Well, here we go. Here's our 70-year-old Joker. You know what I mean? Put Hamill in there in the sequel.
The dentures that would be pretty cool. Real this time.
Yeah, and now the events are real, right? Man of Sand did ask earlier, though, if we thought Joaquin Phoenix would be up for their sequel. And I will be the first to say I don't think so. But what do you guys think?
Well, you've thrown enough. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Dr. Strange. You're the guest.
I was going to say, if he has thrown enough money, yeah, because money talks. but Joaquin Phoenix is an ordinary fellow, and unless he feels compelled by the script, I don't see him coming back.
I was just going to say, I think it's unlikely until you look at the box office for the film, and then I could see them somehow finding a way to work out a deal, potentially to have him reprise his role as the Joker. I don't think you're going to see more than maybe one other film, though. I don't know if he has the interest to, you know, keep, you know, like Robert Downey Jr. to keep coming back as Iron Man. I don't think that would necessarily be happening. But I do think he's seeing right now the platform that playing this kind of an iconic character has helped, you know, kind of give him for some of his other causes that he believes in. So I think that might actually be one of the reasons he might actually consider coming back for a sequel, is to be able to use, you know what I mean, kind of a platform to champion some of his causes. But no, I think maybe one more film, but I don't see like a third film or a series of films for Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker in the future. If they do decide to put forth the three Joker theory, I think we could see him potentially do one more film and then see a different actor actually step into the role for a third film and then maybe something beyond that. That's what I would kind of see.
You can go ahead, Dr. Strange.
I was going to say, I would see like to add on what Dave was talking about, the three Joker theory, that maybe this Joker is going to die off in the next film. And the one that we actually see with Batman is going to be a different one that's actually obsessed with the Batman. And maybe this one, like y'all are saying, that this one actually is going to inspire the Joker that we all know that I have treated.
Interesting.
Yeah, I personally love Bobby's idea of just doing a straight sequel, and it's an older Joker, but it's now Mark Hamill and not Joaquin Phoenix. I love that idea. I don't think it will happen. The way that I always understood that the earliest articles I remember reading about this movie said that this was basically like an Elseworlds one shot. This is a character study. It was never meant to have a sequel. As Doctor Strange said, money does talk, and this movie was incredibly successful. But I don't think that was the intention, and there are no plans. And I feel like if they did do a sequel, I just don't feel they're going to be able to get that cast and crew back together again. Like I just don't feel like it's gonna happen. I like Bobby's idea, I wouldn't mind seeing Joaquin Phoenix reprise the role. The thing that's most interesting to me about this portrayal, and again, going back to talking to my brother when he was kind of discussing things with it, it was funny. Our discussion actually made him like the movie more, because he came out of it not really liking it. Because I would agree with him that this is not the definitive Joker. This is not the Joker. But again, as a character study, it's fascinating. And the point that I made to my brother that made him like it was, hey, you don't know what was real. You don't know what actually happened in this movie. My interpretation of what happened and what was real, and your interpretation of what happened and what was real, and what he spun in his head, it's completely valid. For instance, we were talking earlier about I think Dr. Strange talked about the mother, and we talked about that scene specifically, my brother and I. It's like, for all we know, he didn't even kill his mother. For all we know, his mother died, and in order to cope with her death, he invented this crazy story that she was insane and he killed her. That's just as plausible a theory as anybody else's, because you do not know what is real and what is just in this demented mind.
That's true. And That's one of the things that's interesting about this film too, is it creates at times such an interesting world that at times is both very grounded and real, but at the same point, you know, very much very fictional. You know, and it's just interesting how it plays with the concept of reality and perception in such a way that it reemphasizes the concept of the Joker in general anyway. The idea that in the comics and typically the Joker tells a different origin story. Everyone asks, you know, how did he come to be? So even in the context of how they've crafted the film, and they give the film what appears to be a definitive origin, yet at the same point, there's enough wiggle room in there that maybe it's not. It's just a very well-crafted film, just top to bottom, with tremendous performances actually all over the place. I think for me, that's still the big takeaway from this film, is this film heightens the idea of the sheer potential of the source material and how much there could be done with all these different characters, you know, that actually come from comics and the potential that they all represent at the end of the day.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And it's going to be a tough role for the next actor that takes on the Joker role. They've got quite big shoes to fill, literally.
So. Yeah, literally. Do we think that's good for our second topic here?
I'm good. Dr. Strange, did you have anything else?
That would be a negative.
All right. Well, there you go. So I think we're going to see our way out of this episode. So let's go ahead and we'll start the outro here.
Bobby did have one more thing. He said, three Joker theory and Flash Gordon episodes. You're giving me a lot of homework, Dave. Thank you.
Well, it's definitely just Flash, not Flash Gordon. There's a lot of great content that surrounds a lot of these pop culture characters today, whether you're talking about television, you're talking about the original comics, animated series. There's a lot of tremendous work that's been done over the years. If you enjoy this kind of genre entertainment, if this kind of genre entertainment is not your bailiwick or your cup of tea, you know, then a lot of this other additional materials is maybe not for everyone. But for those of us that quite enjoy it, there's a lot of really great things to discover. And I'm always learning and discovering new and interesting things all the time. We're glad to highlight some of these things, Bobby. That's kind of the point of the Retro Rogues at the end of the day, is hopefully bring light to some of these fun and interesting things that other people maybe haven't considered.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and Five the Live Show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.